Welcome, coaches and fellow split talkers. You have got us back for week two of the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Calder, the coach development officer at Basketball Victoria. Thank you very much for joining us. We have, again, Zoe Carr, the high performance coach for the country women. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. Didn't have a choice. You're in the same house.
Very true.
Makes life a lot easier. We also have via dial-in, and this is where the old STD charges will apply, given where he's dialing in from.
Beep, 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 beep.
Yeah, the one, the only, Ash Arnott, the high performance coach for the Victoria Metro men. Welcome, Ash.
Thanks for having me, Robbie. I did the dialing because the internet's not quite out to Clyde yet. So just on the phone, we're still with the cord, the home phone. That's worked a treat. So I've got at least distance to get to the kitchen bench, the fridge, and to the little desk to take my notes.
Does it have the turning dial? Like, not buttons? It's that.
Yeah, I thought that's the only one you could have.
Yeah.
Is there a new one, Zoe?
I'll hook
Hasn't
you up.
Quite got out the Clyde yet.
I'll hook you up.
Yeah, that's fine. Well, yeah, let me know.
Well, given the delay in your first answer, I'm tipping it's like calling London. Like, you just have that little bit of a few second delay in between me stopping and you starting. But we'll make it work. That's okay. We managed to make it work with Jenny last week.
It's going to be good, Robbie, because it's gonna make me seem a lot smarter with my answers, because it's going to sound like I'm thinking about it before I speak, which is not a normal trait for me.
Really considered with things you do. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. But as we kick off, it's the same as always. Please do like, share, subscribe, retweet, all the cool stuff to help try and grow the podcast. That'd be fantastic. You can obviously get us on Twitter as well with the hashtag Talking Split. You can hit us up via our work emails. Twitter handles, what have you got, Ash?
Ash Arnott.
Short and sweet. Please. I like it.
Yeah, and it's been pumping this isolation break, so get around me. Get at me.
And what's yours, Zoe?
Zoe Carr, 85.
You can get me on at Rob Coulter if you need me as well. Been a ton of new basketball-related podcasts coming out of this isolation period as well. There is a new podcast popping up every week, it seems, somewhere. We used to like corner the market in this, and it was almost like a little bit of a self-indulgent thing where we just get to talk basketball and we were the only ones. But as they say, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, as I stutter over that. Welcome to all the other podcasters. You're now delving into our waters and we will hunt you down individually and try and take you in. No, I'm joking. But the more people that talk basketball stuff, the better. So welcome to all that are involved in that. As we spoke a little bit about it last week, you did the cook-up for the SDP kids the other week. You want to talk us through how that went?
I did. Oh, amazingly. It was the kids learned a lot. I decided to go with a very difficult dish with a homemade pizza. It was quite funny. I do mine a little bit differently, Rob, and I've got plenty of experience when it comes to making homemade pizzas. And Jenny, she didn't like the way I did mine because I'm all about more toppings the better. And we want plenty of flavors in there. We want to keep the mouth guessing. So my big thing, my secret tip there is the cheese goes last because it allows us to keep all the toppings intact.
Last or first?
The kids.
Last.
No, last.
Like last. You put it
it's
on
the last.
Last
thing that goes on the pizza.
Why can't you have both?
Put it on last.
Taco kid.
Yeah.
You can do both. If cheese is your thing, then you can do both. For me, I put it on top. I like because it also allows the pizza to go a little bit brown. Jenny strongly disagreed, tried to get the kids to turn on me, but they didn't. They held strong, which was great. Pizza's turned out great. And then I just did a little bit of a homemade healthy cookie dough, which is surprising for me with the fact that healthy's in the title. That seemed to be a massive hit as well. So I've had that meal pretty much every night since because it's the only thing I also know how to make. So kicking goals on this side, and the internet held strong. Secretly, I did have to go to my parents' house to do it to make sure we had a clear internet connection, but it all worked out in the end.
Ash Arnott, the new mayor of Flavortown. what did you go toppings-wise?
That's right. I like a bit of spice, so I had some jalapenos, ham, cheese, onions, mushrooms, chili flakes. Well, I'll sort of chuck in there. I had some chicken breast. Chorizo,
Pineapple?
What else? Oh, my silence here, Zoe, is through disgust that you would even mention that. Pineapple does not belong on pizza.
This is probably the thing I've heard you speak the most passionately about, is no pineapple on pizzas.
It does not belong on pizza. Some kids did try to use it. Some athletes tried to use it. I do not acknowledge those athletes anymore. No, it was a good night. A lot of them, out of spite, added the pineapple to their pizzas. We had a lot of fun. So, yeah, it was a really good turnout. And yeah, had a lot of fun doing it. So
excellent. I look forward to your cooking blog that you'll no doubt be starting soon, or the Instagram page with Ash's Pizzas.
Oh, it'll be a huge hit. That's not a bad idea. I might write that one down.
You can have that one for free, mate. If there's other thing I think you will speak passionately about, other than the lack of pineapple on pizza, it's shooting, and that is the topic for today. No huge surprise that, you know, when shooting came, we grabbed the two coaches with the greatest shooting technique and ability to talk on this.
Are you being sarcastic?
Oh, I was talking about the two of us.
And they weren't available, right, Robbie? They weren't available.
No,
got Zoe and I.
If we tried to do a shooting podcast and didn't have you involved, Ash, it wouldn't be worth it. It's there's one thing you have based your career on. Oh, actually, there's two things you've based your career on: being a pest and being a shooter. So we'll delve a little bit into your mindset and your psyche as a shooter as well, and what you teach is probably the other part of it now that we need to get into. That, you know, now that you're into that coaching side, what do you teach your athletes and how do you teach it as well? So this is the skill that is probably the hardest thing to get right for a lot of our athletes. And we've spoken at length about this on this podcast, and I know privately as well, about we probably set our players up to fail a little bit just due to the size basketball that they have to start with. So I know like our female athletes in particular, they're playing with a size 6 straight away, which they also use at the Olympics, which doesn't seem fair. So we don't necessarily set our players up for success. And, you know, if we can make a little bit of a shift, then it's unfortunate that McKinnon got shut down when they did, or basketball got shut down when they did, because I was really hoping to see a little bit of how their size 5 basketball experiment would go with the athletes as well. So down the road, we'll get to that as well. But when we're starting to teach our athletes how to shoot, what are the first things you guys focus on? We'll start with you, Ash.
Well, what age group do we want to start with, Robbie? Do we want to start at our youngest one, under 12s and 14s?
Maybe go even younger. Or let's go 10s and 12s.
10s and 12s. I guess the biggest, well, firstly, at a young age, my biggest teaching is just trying to teach the kids to have fun when shooting, developing a passion to get up multiple shots, trying to keep them away from pegging the ball from three. So just having them practice close into the basket, teaching them to have a wide base. And I guess it's that first teaching of trying to use their legs more than their arms when they're younger. I don't stress too much about technique at that young age, because as you know, we're using a heavier ball, and for them, a lot of them, just to make the distance, they have to go into a chucking motion. So it becomes really hard, you know, 10, 11 years and younger, to teach a proper technique. So probably just teaching them more how to connect to the ground, to get their legs involved, get that momentum up into their shot, and just trying to teach them to have fun around shooting, planting those seeds. And then basically, yeah, when we start to go into our those top age under 12s, it's just trying our best to, if they can't make that distance from the three, we're just trying to plant positive seeds and trying to get away any negative flaws that we think may impact them going forward into their career. So for some of them, it is difficult. Like we said, we're going to have some small bodies that haven't developed, probably don't have the strength, that have to have that chucking style or that flick motion. So we just, all we can do is work as well as we can with those guys and trying to keep them from shooting a lot of threes or anything further out, because that's where a lot of habits, a lot of bad habits can start to be formed. But again, trying to get them to understand that wider base, how to connect the legs to the ground, because balance is so important. And when we do get to our older age groups, we see a lot of those athletes with a narrow stance, and especially when trying to shoot off the move, it starts to have a huge impact on them. Is that similar to yours, though, or a little bit different?
I still expose them to the technique and what they need to be doing. So I'll teach them the technique away from the basket, with their feet, like you said, connecting their feet to the ground, lining up their toe, their knee and their elbow, holding their follow through, fingers down, all that sort of stuff, which sounds like a lot of information, but it's not really if you've got them in a quick sort of hit. When it comes to then any type of gameplay, then I don't come down on sort of under 10s or anything. When I say come down on, I don't pick up under 10s or below during games on their technique. I just sort of let them go the way they want. I've got a nephew who is 8 years old who does that chuck that you're talking about purely because he doesn't think, and he's not alone, that he can make the distance unless he throws it, which is, again, why the size 5 ball is, I think, imperative to bring into our younger age groups. But what I do with him is just say, okay, give me 3 free throws. I don't care if you make them or miss them, with good technique, and then shoot however you want. Just to get the ball rolling on what is expected with technique, so when they get to an age where they are physically strong enough to be able to shoot the ball with correct technique, then it's not foreign to them and they're not learning something completely new. I also will spend a fair bit of time on layup footwork and layup finishes, mainly because in under 10s, under 8s, they're really the only kind of shots that they're going to get, because we've all seen it. Rebound, they might pass it out. If they don't, they dribble down, more often than not, the right-hand side of the floor and everybody else follows. They shoot it, rebound, dribble down the right-hand side of the floor, shoot it. So, again, just exposing them to that footwork, exposing them to those things, just so, again, when they're old enough. And in games, if they're on the break and they come to a 2-foot stop and then there's a stop, I'll just say, hey, you know, 2-foot or layup footwork or something like that, just to start ingraining it into their system so it can become a little bit more of a competence rather than a something that they're not even really considering.
I love the word you use, expose. I guess it relates to what we were doing at our under 12 camps on the Metro side last year. We were starting to expose them to that technique, and we can have an argument. I would have loved to have used a size 5 ball at our camps as well, because it allows them obviously to get a better placement on that basketball and doesn't require the same strength as what a size 6 would for those kids in those age groups. But we started to show them where we would like their hand placement on the ball and using a dominant finger. And just trying to get that ball rotating properly and exposing them to those techniques that we're going to be preaching to them in the under 14, 16 and 18 level. So I think that's definitely a key word you used in yours, Zoe, is just trying to expose them to those right techniques and implant that terminology and key points we want to teach when shooting.
Well, and when they don't have the ability from a strength or coordination point of view in a game to be able to do it, we don't, you know, bring the hammer down on them when they don't do it in a game. Let them do what they do in a game. Let them enjoy it, like what you spoke about before, Ash. Let them enjoy it and love shooting and love playing the game. But just little reminders. Hey, remember to get your elbow in on that or something, you know. And it may, I know when I coached bottom age under 12s, it at times became cumbersome. I felt like I was saying the same thing over and over again. But by the end of the season, it went away from the chuck sort of style or the hitches in the shot, and we started to see some actual technique. Now, was it perfect? Not even close, but at least they were then starting to try it, because there was just that little reminder of, oh, I've got to get my elbow in, I've got to get my knee over my toe or whatever it might be. And so I think just those little constant reminders. But a really big thing for it, I think, is not, as coaches, not being result focused. So when we're teaching the technique to the younger age groups, the very young age groups especially, if it airballs, but the technique is right, we need to celebrate that and make sure that the athlete is aware that that's what we want to see, even though it's airballed, because the athletes will look at they'll determine whether it's a good shot, whether it goes in or whether it misses. And we need to sort of reprogram them a little bit and let them know that the technique is what's more important, not the result.
So the big thing you've both discussed so far is the footwork. Any preferences from either of you on stride stops versus jump stops, or are you not even bothering to teach it at that point? Are you just allowing them to be wherever they want to be with their bases? Does it matter? Do you expose them to it?
Well, under 12s, I'd probably teach you more of the 2 foot jump into it, just teaching them about balance, working on their stance, being hip width apart, teaching them just even how to move, like the pivots, the timing of their jumps when the ball's in the air, get them to jump on the catch. Sorry, when the ball's in the air, they're jumping, catching, coming down, getting their momentum into their shot and teaching how their legs are useful for their shot. So probably not so much a stride stop at under 12s. With our super knowledgeable under 12 kids, yeah, it may work, but just try not to, I guess, fry their brain with so much information there. Then as we start going up through the ranks, we start teaching that stride stop. And then as they get even older, I think it's all about where they are on the court. So each scenario is different. The amount of times we see people stepping out of bounds, well, in the corners, I started teaching those quick jump stops. And then anything from inside out, we're stepping in that 1-2, so stride stops. But, yeah, under 12s, I think I'll probably just more focus on using the legs and being able to just move in the air and that timing of the catch and probably more important for me. But I'm always open for new ideas too, Robbie. So if someone's got a better way to teach it, I'm all ears.
What are you teaching?
I'm both. I think it's important to teach both. In particular, when I was teaching 12s, we used to do a lot of stuff with spin the ball out, inside foot catch, up and in, and that's obviously more stride stop than jump stop for mine. So I think it's important you teach both. Again, it's an exposure thing. Show them both. Like, they'll work out for them what's comfortable, and comfort is probably king, really. If it's not comfortable, they're not going to use it. So give them as much information as you possibly can, and they'll decide what they want and well, what they want to keep and what they don't want to keep too, I suppose, is probably the part that really matters to me on that. You did hit on hip width apart, though, Ash, which I really like. I heard Dave Love talk about that when he was out here last year, and you can follow him on at Coach Dave Love on Twitter, and he's a great follow. Like, his knowledge of shooting and how he breaks things down is phenomenal. But he spoke about hip width being more important because the athletes can actually see their hips, whereas they can't see their shoulders when we start talking about shoulder width apart. So a really interesting teaching point straight away there that makes a lot more sense for the athletes rather than trying to work out where are their shoulders and they have to look up and down on their body to try and work out if their feet are in the right spots and things like that. It's the hip width one is one I really like.
I stole it from Dave Love too, Robbie. Listening to speak, and it just made such perfect sense. It's always hard. For me, I can't really see my shoulders. Mind you, though, probably with my belly, I can't really see my hip anymore either. But it's definitely for kids to be able to look at their hips down and see how wide their stance is. It was just easier for them to see that and understand a little bit better.
I think the thing I took away the most from watching Dave Love clinics was the finger placement and what is actually the middle of your hand. So I would have always thought if someone said to me, if you were to put the middle finger on the basketball or the middle of your hand on the basketball, where would it be? I would have thought it would be your, we call this finger,
middle finger.
But more often than not, it's actually your index finger that is the middle of your hand in terms of distance. And if you measure from thumb to index finger and then index finger to pinky, it's more often than not, it's generally the same distance. And that was really interesting for me that actually, when I picked up a basketball next, that actually changed where I would put my hand. So I think that's something to definitely use as a teaching point. And especially with the younger under 10s, under 8s athletes, of using the pump needle hole as, I guess, a guide, a visual for them. Because if we just say, I'll put it on the middle of the basketball, they're not going to really know where that is. But if you say, put your index finger on where that hole pump hole is, then that is a visual for them that they can easily do, and that then they can work on themselves as well. And eventually that becomes something that is just instinct and not something you then have to coach.
Where were you at, Ash, with that? Like, where did you have your hand on the ball when you were a shooter?
Mine was an index finger. I was probably the same as what Dave Love preaches. And when you watch his stuff, obviously he's very adamant it has to be your index finger. But after dealing with a lot of shooters, I think everyone's different, whether it's their middle finger, whether it's their index finger. And I think everybody needs to kind of find their balance on how it sits on their hand perfectly. I believe there's a guy, I think Guy Malloy talks about this as well. And I think he used the examples of Andrew Gaze versus Lauren Jackson, where Andrew Gaze was an index finger shooter and Lauren Jackson used the middle of her finger. So it just shows you there's two of our greatest basketball players ever and had a different finger. For me, yeah, that index finger, I was like, Zoe, when Dave Love did the measurements of index finger to the pinky and the thumb, I was amazed. I was like, oh, wow,
yeah,
that's the middle. And then I found, oh, well, that's actually how I shot, based off my index finger being the last finger to touch the basketball. Now, I'm not going to put myself up there, Robbie, as some elite shooter, but I definitely found that was comfortable, and I saw some success shooting that way.
You take the fun out of it when you jump on those grenades before we've had a chance to have a crack at them ourselves, to be honest with you, Ash. I mean, you are the only person in this isolation period that has gone back, found video of themselves playing and sent it out in multiple group chats of them making a jumper.
It wasn't a jumper. It was a long three.
But it was a deep NBA three, Robbie, and it looked natural, didn't it?
It did. It did. But I think the big point of that, the big thing Dave talks about a lot is middle of the hand or middle of the ball. Wherever the middle of your hand is, that's what needs to be on the middle of the ball. And it makes a lot of sense to me too. Like, of course, it didn't make sense to me until I heard him say it. So, you know, credit to him. But he is a phenomenal teacher of all things shooting. So that is a great teaching point I like to use with a lot of my athletes, is make sure your middle of the hand on the middle of the ball. The other one I use a lot is elbow under the ball. Like, I'm really big on making sure that that propels up and you get some form of power out of that, I suppose. But we just don't want the elbow too far out to the side. And people have got differing opinions on this, because there's a couple of schools of thought of, well, if that's comfortable for them and that's how their levers work in their body, you know, a 7-footer shoots the ball with very different technique to a 5-footer, just because different body types and the like. So I've always been really big on elbow under the ball, but I know some people are a little bit more flexible, I suppose, for elbow out. Zoe, do you have any preference when you teach shooting?
I always teach elbow under. I think if there's something different about the athlete's shot that you just can't change, then they'll find that their own way. But I think we need to, the statistics, everything that's, you know, all the research, all of that has said that elbow under the ball, more often than not, is a more successful way to shoot the ball. So always trying to keep, especially, again, with the younger kids, you know, giving them something to help them remember, is the Tony elbow. You know, your best friend when you shoot the ball is Tony elbow, and they have a giggle. But it's that your toe and your knee and your elbow are all in line, and that organically will keep your elbow in if those things stay. But something I've noticed in the younger age groups, and harp on it again, but probably because of the weight of the basketball, but the hitch in the shot, the where they dip it and sort of launch it, which then brings the elbow out and causes that habit. Really important to keep that all in line, because if everything is in line, there's less, it still happens. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but it's less likely to have that hitch, because with the elbow in, you have to rely on your legs and your core for your power. So basically that's what I teach when I, especially brand new shooters.
Ash, do you care on the dip?
No. No, not, I do probably when I have the big, it's a big force dip, where they bring the ball down to go all the way up. But I do truly believe that everyone has a natural dip in their shot, and it comes from when you're here, when the ball's in the air, our feet in the air, well, our momentum's going down, so the ball will naturally go down as we rise up into our shot. And so I talk about the natural dip. we could start a big debate here, Robbie, about should shooters have a dip, not have a dip. But if you look at a lot of the great shooters, the ball goes down because their momentum's going down to get their legs under their shot. And then as they get that elbow lift, that's when they start to get that ball to rise up. I think it's very hard to just have that ball into that shooting position where their elbow's under the ball, catch it there naturally and go into a shot. That's obviously the textbook shot, how much that happens every game. It's tough. Even I've watched Clay Thompson, who I think is just one of the most beautiful shooters in our game in terms of his technique. He'll still catch it. The ball will come down into that natural dip and then rise up into that textbook finish. So I guess I don't stress too much if there is that natural dip. I think it happens. But if someone's catching the ball, then bringing the ball down to their knee back up to slingshot it, that's where I probably have a little bit more issues in with a shooter. And you'll find probably normally that shooter isn't knocking down shots as consistently as the others.
Yeah, I think when the hand comes almost above the ball on that dip, that's when it's a problem. So if you're catching underneath the ball, yep, and it is, as Ash said, a natural flow and a latent momentum, that's one thing. When the hand is actually moving on that dip, either to behind or above the ball, that's when you start to see a problem, and that's the hitch I'm talking about.
Dipping, it matters, but it's not the worst thing that can happen with someone's shot. Like if they need to dip to get a little bit of power, like momentum's the big reason that you would probably dip the ball in particular when you come to a stop, you're straight up and through it. I think that's a great time to dip. But what about with the guide hand? Because that can have just as big an impact on the shot. So as we've caught the ball, we're down, we're loaded, we're coming up. Are you guys really big on the guide hand following? Like, how far up do you want that to go? Because I know there are some coaches that will say you should almost take your guide hand off the ball straight away. There are others that are like, well, it should be there all the way until you've released it. There are others that will say it should go up to around about the height of your elbow on the way through. Are there any teaching points that you guys have used? So we will start with you on this one.
Mine's always been the guide hand is irrelevant above the head, so it stays with you because as you get above the head, you're in that motion of about to release the ball, and you can make the decision on whether you need to hold onto it for a second longer by then if you're about to sustain contact. So for mine, it's once the ball is above the head, that's when the guide hand, it's not released, it's simply pushed. As you push through with your shot and your follow through, it just holds above your head. That's basically what I've used as a general guide.
Ash, what do you got?
Well, as simple as it sounds, I used to try and just teach athletes that the guide hand is what its name. It's just its job is to guide the ball to the basket. Now, where I've tried a drill where they start shooting with their guide hand is as close as they can to the basketball without touching it. So practicing those one-hand shots with guide hand in place, and trying to get into the habit that we just want that guide hand on the ball to balance the ball, keep it in tight. So if I do get fouled, I still have that ability to keep the ball in balance and get a shot off. Because essentially it is, every time we shoot, it's a one-handed shot. Now, but there's plenty of evidence out there that if a shooter does have their guide hand on top of the ball, it helps them a little bit more with the balance, and they have that natural touch where they can keep the ball straight in line with their target. I think that's more of an individual preference, and the majority doesn't have that skill set to be able to not have an impact on the ball. So for us, just keeping that ball on the side, keeping it straight, a big issue we have among our under-16s and 18s is that guide hand opening up too early. So when they finish with their follow-through, they've got their follow-through pointing at the rim, probably to the side, and their palm facing the rim as well because their guide hand's opened up. And that's when we start to have misses from left to right. So just trying to teach our athletes to keep that guide hand in the middle of our body, thumb obviously pointing down to our forehead, and keeping that thing side on. So again, it's just acting as that guide. And with your thumb to the forehead, the reason why I'm just teaching that is because we're just trying to teach to keep the kids that thumb out of the shot. And that's another massive issue we see with our juniors is the guide hand. We call them the thumb. that thumb starts to get involved, hence why the guide hand opens, and now we've got two hands having an impact on our shot.
I think it's a really good point. That's probably one of the things I notice with junior athletes the most, in particular the younger ones, because they are searching for that extra power, so they tend to shoot it with the two hands instead of the one hand, and it's why form shooting still exists to this day. Like, it's still one of the best drills we can do with our athletes, is just teaching them how to form shoot constantly, and it's that one hand on the ball and up and through it, and then get used to putting your second hand on and gradually lifting up with, you know, your hand not touching, then your hand touching, and all that kind of stuff as well. It is a really big progression, and that's the big thing I think with our shooting, is that we can get lost in that there's so much to teach. And I would encourage coaches in their own time to sit down, if you were teaching someone for the first time, write down your process as to what you would teach, when you would teach it, and how you would teach it, and what information you would give to the athlete, and just see how many checkpoints there are in that. Because that would be over a dozen, I would have thought, to get it to a point where you're comfortable saying, I've taught them everything they possibly need to know at this stage. It's lengthy. Shooting is not easy. When you have got some spare time, and coaches, we have a lot of it at the moment, write down your process on teaching someone to shoot with all your teaching points within that. And that can start from before they've got the ball, that could be after they've caught the ball, all the way through to the release point. Like, what do you teach and what do you value as a shooter or as a shooting coach in particular?
Yeah, I think with the form shooting, you're spot on. There is so much in just form shooting. If you've got an athlete that does have, I guess, inconsistencies or something that's not quite right in their shot, they've probably got two or three, especially when you first start. Just subtract one at a time. So just fix, you know, if you've got that list that you're talking about, Rob, of what are your priorities, then whichever one is higher on that list, subtract that one first. And if that's the only one you take out in the whole season, that's fine. I think sometimes we get caught up trying to do too much, and if we take out that one at a time, have that one at a time thought process, then a couple of things will happen. The athlete's more likely to make a change because they're not feeling like, oh, I'm doing this wrong, I'm doing that wrong, I'm doing this wrong, I'm doing that. They're just focusing on the one thing. They'll also then learn how to coach themselves, and I think with form shooting, that's probably a really important point. They're going to shoot the ball without us a lot more than with us. So we need to instruct our athletes or turn them into coaches of their own shot. So basically pulling information from them. Why did that miss? Or why did that, or what happened with that shot? Or, you know, trying to get them to learn the information as we would see it. So when they're at home or at school or wherever it is that they're shooting the ball, they can make those adjustments themselves and not have to rely so heavily on a coach sort of critiquing every sort of aspect of their shot.
And that's really easy to do too with the use of video. Like, they can video their own shot and they can self-analyze a little bit and find out what's good for them and what's not good for them. So easy to do. And in slow motion in particular, you will see every frame where something is potentially going wrong, where the knee's bend in, or you dip your shoulder a little bit too more and you sort of collapse in on yourself, or you are thumbing the ball and pushing off with that guide hand as well. I think it's an easy way for athletes to actually go and find out, well, what am I doing right and what am I doing wrong? And I know from my perspective, by no means was I a good shooter, but I understood more about what I was doing wrong when I had to start coaching other people. So when I actually started coaching teams myself, that's when I started to see the problems in other people's shots, and it's like, man, if I'm telling them that they need to fix that, maybe I should have fixed that when I was playing as well. So it became a little bit more knowledgeable. Like, the more you have to coach someone, the better that is. So that might be for coaches. Have your players film themselves shooting and let them swap. Someone else has to break down what are the problems with their shot and how can we potentially fix it as well. It's a really easy way of getting some interaction between your players, in particular at the moment while it's in downtime. But having them become a little bit of a coach as well, they can start to pinpoint the problems in someone else's area and work on how to fix them. Anything from you there, Ash, before I move on?
No, this is funny. I'm sitting here nodding my head like I'm listening to the podcast. It's a different feeling for me, sorry. I'm okay. Yeah,
that's a weird point.
No, I think, like, just through this break with some of my athletes, they've just been filming five to six shots and sending it through to me, and we've just been looking at frame by frame. And yes, from each frame, especially with 15, 16, 17-year-old kids, you are going to find probably something wrong with every shot, but we're looking for that common, probably poor habit that's in their shot, and that's something that we can screenshot, we can send back, we can talk to them about, we can highlight, and it gives the kids a visual. So when they do go back out to their shot, they're thinking about that one area they can fix. So it's been very helpful. And again, like what you talked about, Robbie, I wish I went back and watched more video of myself. I still remember my younger self with Eddie Kallick, who was one of the best one of the best shooting coaches, especially here in Victoria. But he used to film me shooting in our shot check form. And we used to talk about key points there, and we took that video, went home and worked on it. And that definitely helped, and probably something I went away from as I was older, but definitely something athletes should be utilizing now. Filming themselves shoot, having a look at it, and becoming their own shot doctor in a way.
I have a question, which I'm not sure whether there'll be agreed answers here. At what stage or at what age is the technique and that's it, and we leave it alone?
Ash, you can have first crack at that. Oh,
yeah, I think never. Like, look at Kawhi Leonard, perfect. In college, I won't say his technique was really bad. There was obviously some really good to his technique, but some consider it was flawed. Well, the Spurs, who no doubt have one of the best, well, if not the best shooting coach in the world in Chip Inglewood, he saw something in Kawhi. He went to the Spurs, and now one of the top 3-point shooters, or one of the top shooters, because his pull-up game is obviously so strong in the world. So I think there's always, at every age, you can adapt and change people's shots. I guess the shooters that have a high number of poor habits, it's going to be a lot more difficult, because how much work and time needs to go into a shooter. But yeah, I think that we can always change. It's just, I guess it's what platform do we have that athlete? Let's say for our athletes in FDP, if we had them 6 days a week and we were able to work on their shot every day, I think we'd be able to produce some pretty serious shooters. We only get our athletes, like you said, on a small number a week, and we're working on a bunch of skills. It does become hard to implement really positive habits. So I guess I think it's more comes down to how much time do we have with those athletes to change that technique. If it's limited, then I think it becomes really tough, Zoe. But if we do have those hours, we do have that time, I strongly believe we can change any basketballer's shot.
I think you've hit on my argument probably towards the end of your argument, in all honesty. I don't know that we have time to change our athletes once they've hit 16, because they just don't have the hours in the day or the hours in the week to work on that, unless they are those elite level athletes. Like, I think for your average VJBL player, for argument's sake, by the time they hit 16, they are what they are. You'll be able to make some minor adjustments within that, but you won't be able to have wholesale changes and almost just redevelop a shot or reteach a shot. So I think you can make adjustments, but I don't know that you're going to get the wholesale changes by under 16s. And this is why teaching the athletes the correct way earlier is such a valuable benefit for us. If we've got them on the right path, well, there are less things to have to fix in under 16s or have to adjust to. So they're at least a long way down the path, where there just seem to be some minor things that you can tweak within that. But if we've had to reconstruct a whole shot by under 16s, they don't have enough hours to get good, I don't think, by that stage.
I think also something that we have to consider is, by under 16s, they may have upwards of 5 or 6 coaches too that are potentially focusing on different things or having different messages. So, yeah, it's just an interesting one of, like, I agree with both of you. I think if we've got the time, if you're in that professional type of setting, like the NBA guys, like you look at Delly, who's transformed his shot. He's with a shooting coach or a trainer on the daily. When we've got, you know, 2 sessions a week or 1 session a week or whatever it might be, then yeah, it does become difficult. And I suppose then the next question comes of, when you get to that point, can volume contested shooting override technique?
Yeah, your player has to be willing to change is the big thing too. Like it, and we've all seen it. How many times have we had a kid on the foul line, we've made a small adjustment where we said, look, just put your elbow in or your elbow out, or
hold your follow through
a little bit longer, and the next shot's an air ball. And they look at you with this stupid look on the face and we go, oh, yeah, my bad. Like that one could be on me. It happens all the time. So you need to have a level of trust with your athlete as well that you can make a change without them going, why are you changing my shot? And this is going to be a problem for me. So, I mean, Shane Hill's a great example. That is not a technique I would potentially use to teach a junior athlete how to shoot the ball. But it worked for him. Like, it worked for his body type. It worked for, you know, how often he shot the ball. And, you know, natural for him is not natural for someone else. So I would suggest in that situation, volume has overridden probably the fundamentally sound technique, so to speak. It works. So in that situation, why would you change it? Just because it doesn't look like your conventional shooting technique. Sean Marion's another one. I'm hitting on Ash's Phoenix Suns boys at the moment. But Sean Marion is one whose technique did not look great. But by the same token, it went in a lot. So if it's going to go in a lot, why change it?
Well, and just to use, a female example, Rebecca Allen. You look at that technique and she drags it over to her left eye, which is obviously her dominant eye. But the shot goes in. And it's interesting that people would look at it and say, why didn't anybody try and change it? Probably because it went in.
I think, Robbie, like you speak of Shane Hill, Sean Marion, all these guys, Beck Allen, and you think about all our great shooters all around the world, not many of them shoot the same way. So it just shows that shooting does become individual and everyone's going to have a different shot. But I think the common theme is there's some really key points that they all do really well. So although Shane Hill and Andrew Gaze had two very different techniques, you found that there was the elbow lift there. Their elbow was facing in line with their target and their follow-through were strong follow-throughs. Their rotation of the ball was really good and everything finished at the basket. When I say everything, I mean, sorry, the top half, the arms. So everything was facing their target. So I think there's always those key points that every shooter has. Like Steph Curry to Klay Thompson, obviously two of the best shooters our generation's probably seen. When I say I'm considering myself young here, Robbie, so don't tell everyone my real age. But we're seeing these guys right now. We're seeing these two great shooters shoot completely different ways. However, their elbow faces on their elbow lift, their elbows facing their target, which allows their follow through to be straight, their fingers finish facing the target, and it's a strong follow through every time. So we've got those common trends throughout. And that's, I guess, for me, moving forward, we have to understand that, yes, we all have our set ways in how we want to shoot and teach, but each individual is going to be different in the way they shoot the ball. And we need to find those little habits there that help them become a great shooter. And that's that difficult part. And that's, I guess, something I'm always learning with each athlete. And it's really important. That's where that video, coming back again to a couple of your points, that video becomes really handy. And we're starting to see. So we could argue all day long about targets. Some people watch the ball, some people watch the target, and each of our great shooters are different there as well. And that's where, again, it becomes individual, comes feel. What's best for you, and through conversations as well. Talk to your athletes. The older ones that, obviously I'm not going to talk to my under 14 kid the same way I'd talk to an NBL player, but start having those conversations and have them understand shooting and what we're aiming for and what we're looking at and our key points every time. And we need to harp on those key points, that quality over quantity.
One of the coaches you've had a fair bit to do with over the years, Ash, Dan Marley, revolutionised his shooting over the course of one summer. And the question was posed to him, what was the biggest thing you changed? And he's like, oh, I just shot it straight. Like, now, obviously, there's some volume that goes into that as well. But it is incredible how often we just lose sight of that. It's like, just get it straight. We can worry about the length and the distance on it afterwards, but just shoot the ball straight and you obviously have a better chance of it going in. What are some things that you've used in the past to encourage our athletes to really get the ball straight when they shoot it?
Probably the where's your elbow facing? Where's your elbow facing? On the lift. So as I lift that ball, if my elbow's in line with my target, it allows my follow through to be in line with the target. It's funny you mentioned Dan Marley. He had one opinion that I know there's a lot of coaches that would disagree, but he always said, I don't mind if you miss short. As a shooter, I don't mind if you miss short if it's straight. I can live with that. Yes, it starts fast breaks, but when I'm a shooter and learning, if I'm going long and short but they're straight, I'm in a good position. I can work on my power. But if I'm missing left to right, I have too many things wrong with my shot. There's something else impacting my shot. And that's something that stayed with me, and I still tell the kids right now. As we're learning shooting, I don't mind if they finish short if it's straight. And that's been something helping with our shooters. And that's something I talk about still now. I'm clapping my hands. I don't know why. It's probably impacting me. That's to make my points. I'm clapping and I'm talking. So I apologize. But that's been a big thing. And when I watched Dan Marley shoot, on that elbow lift, his elbow was always in line with the target. And he had so much power in his arms, he would just go bang, lock and snap, and that thing was money. It always hit middle of the rim at the back, and it used to just fall down straight to the net. So it was always middle, back, and down a rim, middle, back, and down a rim. And that's something I start talking to our athletes as well as their target. Every time we shoot, we want to hit middle, back, down of the rim. Middle, back, down there. I'm just going to keep repeating myself so it sticks in there. You want who listens here, Robbie.
We'll have this on a drop in some future episodes, though. No problems.
So when you talk about elbow in line with the target, are you saying that his elbow is pointing at the target? Or are you saying his elbow...
Yeah, so on that elbow lift, Zoe, as he brings the ball up, so his elbow's not in line from the get-go, so he doesn't catch it with his elbow in line. But as that elbow lifts up and he's about to start his lock and snap of the ball, his elbow's in line with his target. So his body, he could catch the ball, his lower half could be facing another way, but as he lifts up, his elbow could face the target starting his follow-through and it would be in line. Now, that elbow would be shoulder line or higher as he's starting his follow through. So that ball lift is getting nice and high,
yep,
and up, and that elbow would be in line with the target.
Sounds simple, doesn't it? Like when you put it like this, it's like, well, yeah, shoot it straight, get your elbow in line with the rim and just shoot it. And you hit on an interesting point there. And again, it's much debate with a lot of coaches. Where are you teaching your athletes to aim? And I've always been a back of the rim person. But again, I survey a lot of players that I've coached over the years. And they're like, yeah, well, I just aim at the rim. Like, yeah, but where in particular? I don't know, just the rim. Like, they don't give you anything specific. It's like, well, that's a problem. But I've always thought teaching where the net goes through the eyelet on the back of the rim is where I want my players to aim at, and just to make sure that they hit that point with the ball going on the way down in particular. Zoe, have you taught anything different?
No, that's the eyelet's been the target I've used. Whether they're using it is another conversation, but a big one, and I know Coops is massive on this as well, is just on that follow through, having fingers down. I feel like having fingers pointed straight, again, I'm doing demonstrations of this that nobody can see, but fingers pointing straight at the rim, I feel like, is telling the ball to go flat towards the rim, whereas having fingers down is telling the ball to actually go down into the rim rather than hitting basically at the front or the little connector between the back of the rim and the backboard. So have always been aim for that eyelet with your fingers pointing to it and pointing down.
Ash, you any different?
Fingers pointing down. Fingers pointing down on the snap and just in line. So your middle finger and index finger should basically be in line with your target. That's pretty much the same as me. But, yeah, that's probably all I've got to add there, Robbie.
Solid input, mate. I appreciate it.
Cool
been really good.
Hansel.
Yeah.
Sorry. That's quite okay. So when we're teaching our athletes to shoot, how do we implement this into training sessions? Now, obviously, when we return to basketball at the moment, given the lockdown, it's going to be one basketball per person. So we can't do a great deal of catch and shoot stuff. Obviously, social distancing being what it is, it may be very difficult to do form shooting, given they're probably not a metre and a half apart as well. What are some of the things we can encourage our athletes to do to really drill into the fundamentals again? Because potentially, given they've had so much time away from the sport, not that they necessarily forget, but some of their technique can be a little bit different to what it was before they went away. So what are the things that we can do at our training sessions to really make sure that the technique is back to where it needs to get to?
Well, my biggest thing would be you can still form shoot even though there isn't, there's the social distancing issues. They have a ball each, which is great. I actually think it's a really good time to lock in on form shooting. Just take them, I think I mentioned it before, just take them away from the basket. Have them in that space and have them use a lot, like where the ball lands on the floor. So after they shoot the ball as their target. So that way they can, again, without the direct result of make or miss, they can really focus in, and you as a coach can focus in on their technique and what you might see that needs to be worked on. One thing I will say about form shooting, though, especially in the older age groups, you have to value it or they won't. And I've noticed it even with some of our athletes. You know, we say, okay, form shooting, you know, aiming for six swishes, all that sort of stuff. And they just go through the motions, all that sort of stuff. And we need it to be as early as possible instilled into these athletes that form shooting is important at any age. It can, if you're having a, I distinctly remember at under 20s when I was coaching in 2017, I want to say, in Bendigo, and Kara Tassari, who I'm not sure if people have heard of, I'm sure some of you have, wasn't shooting the ball well and is known for somebody who can actually shoot, especially the three, quite well. And we got to our shoot around and we got to the shooting section, so we'd gone through all of our scout and all that sort of stuff. And I said, okay, this is what we're doing for our shooting. And she walked up and she said, Zoe, can I just form shoot a little bit? I need to get my shot back. And that kind of took me back a little bit. I was like, that is incredibly mature. And absolutely, yes, go take that rim. And you know, she worked on what she needed to work on and got her shot back. So we need to instill in our athletes that form shooting is important. It is something, it is not just a session filler, and it's something that they need to really, really focus on. But I've gone off on a tangent, I apologize. But take them, my advice would be take them away from the rim, have them in their distancing that they need to, and really lock down on those few points of their shot that, you know, you want to try and improve.
Yeah, I'm saying, Robbie, for me, shot check's huge. I'm not saying you have to spend 20, 30 minutes of it a session, but just being able to go in there, and it's like every day I can go, right, reset. I'm going to concentrate on my shot. What are the key points here? It may take 5 minutes. And I know I've gotten some really great ways to teach different areas of your shot and shot check from the guys up at the COE. In Adam Caporn and Michael Cassidy. I saw a lot of their things from the follow through to the lift of the ball and to their balance of their shot. So it's been really good there, teaching a variety of ways. And we teach those now within our SDP and VMPP programs. But like Zoe said, you have to let the athletes know how important it is. And I'm a big believer in shot check. You know, slow it right down. Take your time. Go through each stage of this shot and make sure it feels great. You may not want to go five in a row. Maybe, hey, you make two or three in a row and you're like, yeah, that part feels great. I'm going to finish on a great note. You move to the next section of your shot. But I think you've got to slow it down. A lot of the time I do see shot check. It's one of those routines. Okay, guys, shot check. The coaches can talk a bit of trash at half court and not focus on the athlete's shot. And they're just rushing, shooting them just because they just want to get it over and done with. It's a really important part where we lock in. And there's a reason why all the great shooters before they play a game first thing they do is go out close to the rim and recharge. They get their shot right. They focus in. And that's probably the part where you don't see them smiling and messing around with anyone around them. They are locked in and in tune with their body, the connection with their hands to the ball, the connection with their feet to the floor. And they're ready to shoot when the game starts.
I think now's a great time, as we're starting to return as well, where we can start to incorporate some footwork into our shooting as well. Like, this is a great time to start working on pivots into shot, how you square up, your inside foot, outside foot, into throw down, those kinds of things as well. Are great ways to, we're probably not going to be able to pass the ball for a couple of weeks as we come back anyway. We're going to need to find different ways to keep our athletes active at our training sessions. So I think the shooting side of things, the more time we can spend doing that, and again, we don't know which kids have had access to basketball rings during this time as well, so that's going to be an issue, but we do want them doing as much shooting stuff as they can, but we need to value it as coaches. So if we don't value it, they don't value it, and form shooting is the one where obviously there's a ton of value in that, but it can be really easy to just be very dismissive of it too. So if we don't value it as a coach, they won't value it as a player, and we're really just wasting everyone's time. So the more you can be involved in that process, the better it is.
My big, obviously, we haven't talked about so much of it, what we do as individual coaches to teach shooting. So if that's something someone wants to email about the different areas we teach within BB, I'm more than happy to have that conversation, or even how we add layers. Probably the only thing is, only thing I'll talk about or touch on a bit more is some of the things we've learned through our VMPP shooting sessions. Very early on, we used to collect take down scores. Every drill had a time and a score. We used to take down what the kids would score, and would be like, "Oh, great! You know, John Doe shooting at 60% from three. This is fantastic." Well, that athlete will then go off to nationals. And those scores weren't correlating from the game to our testing. So we were like, okay, well, this is probably not working. How else can we adjust? So as this goes on, we're learning new things about how to teach better shooters, and there's a place for shot check. There's a place for volume shooting. There's a place to test our shooters. There's a place to do contested shooting. There's a place for concept shooting. So now it's about trying to find that balance. And the most important thing is the tempos we're shooting at. So we need to make sure we are layering our shooting, and we focus on the distance. Then we're focusing on speeds. Then we're focusing on gaze movements. And then ensure that we're focusing at our kids being able to shoot against defensive pressure. And if we're trying to change a shot, and we're trying to work with someone about changing one of those bad habits to a great habit, putting them into a one-on-one setting in a contested shooting environment is not the best place for them to begin with. So we had one athlete last year that when she came to our VMPP program, especially when she got to the corner, this athlete was hitting all over the shop, and you could see the frustration. So for a good 4 to 5 weeks, every session they came in, they were just focusing on their technique. And we put it, and they didn't leave outside of the charge circle. We focused there for 2 weeks. And then we took a step back, and it was around the old netball lines that we had them shooting and practicing. And we started seeing some results. Then we moved to the back. I tried to take out who it was, but I've used the gender already, so I do apologize. We moved them back and back, further back. And now they're starting to make threes in games, and they're making more than just one. And the confidence is rising and the belief's rising. And that's probably the most important part, is how are we building our shooters? And 5 minutes of shot check and a change of their habit is not going to work. Like, it needs to be reinforced. There needs to be work on it, and then putting them into a competitive environment is only going to see them fall back into their natural poor habits that hasn't helped them in the past.
It's a whole other topic, I think, is coaching shooters' mentality.
Mm.
Well, we've all had them, people that are absolutely certain they will make every shot that they can possibly get. We might say that for another podcast. Ash, you've done well there. You've hit on something that we can use again, so I like that. That's well done.
Oh, mate, I could speak an hour for that one. That's one thing I didn't have. I did not have. when it came to the shooting mentality. So I'm more than happy to talk about that one.
Excellent. We'll lock you in down the road a little bit, and we'll get into the shooter's mentality in particular. But that does wrap us up for this week. Thank you, everyone, for jumping in. Again, hashtag Talking Split on Twitter if you have something to say or if you want to contribute to anything. If you've got any ideas about upcoming shows as well, more than happy to hear them on Twitter. You can send them through. Thank you, Zoe, for taking 10 steps from the kitchen table where we're working.
It was tough.
It was tough. Big thanks to Ash for calling in from Clyde. We'll see if we can get you, I don't know, like a 5G tower or something out there.
I've actually burned some calories. I've been sitting in a stance here, going through hand actions, walking around my office, thinking that you guys can see me, clapping my hands when I speak, nodding my head when you guys are talking, forgetting that I'm on the podcast. It's been an experience.
Always is. Coaches, thanks very much. We appreciate you jumping in, and we'll talk to you guys over the next couple of weeks.